You're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hello, I'm Michael Piotrasch. Welcome to another recording of articles from Popular Science Magazine, a presentation of Airs LA. This week's articles include, at 1 minute, vivid dreams trick your brain into thinking you slept well. At 5 minutes, 50 seconds, are some dog breeds really easier to train? Not really. And finally, at 13 minutes, 18 seconds, Europe's first domesticated dogs arrived over 3,000 years earlier than we thought. Let's get to it. This first article is from the Health Psychology section and is entitled, Vivid Dreams Trick Your Brain into Thinking You Slept Well, written by Laura Baesis, published March 24, 2026. Even though our brains are more active, those hyper-detailed dreams may make us feel more rested. This article begins with a photo, a stylized photo of a woman sleeping. Its caption reads, Dreams really may be the guardians of sleep. Picture your perfect morning wake-up. Your eyes flutter open, the sun is gently streaming in through the window, and you actually feel rested from the night before instead of groggy. That sensation of getting a really good night's sleep comes from more than just the recommended 7 to 9 hours of shut-eye. It's also up to our perception of how deeply we slept without interruption. And dreams may be the key to that perception. Our dreams, particularly the more vivid and immersive ones, could help us feel like our sleep was deeper and restorative. Instead of tiring us out, all of that dreaming may make us feel more rested, according to a study published today in the journal PLOS Biology. Deep sleep is often thought of as the brain being more switched off, with slower brain waves, little activity, and no awareness of the outside world. In this school of thought, the deeper the sleep, the less active the brain. By comparison, dreaming has been associated with rapid eye movement, REM sleep, and partial awakenings of the brain during sleep. We also experience the REM stage, marked by intense dreaming and brain activity, similar to when we are awake, as relatively deep sleep. To investigate this contradiction between our brain's activity and how we perceive our level of restfulness, scientists analyzed overnight recordings from 44 healthy adults. The participants slept in a laboratory while researchers measured their brain activity with high-density electroencephalography, EEG. In the experiment, the team repeatedly awakened the participants from non-REM sleep. They asked the participants to report their mental experiences just before waking up and to rate perceived sleep depth and level of sleepiness. The team found that the participants reported the deepest subjective sleep after more vivid and immersive dreams. By comparison, minimal or fragmentary sleep experiences like a vague sense of being present somewhere without clearly understanding what was going on in a dream were associated with the shallowest perceived sleep. Quote, in other words, not all mental activity during sleep feels the same. The quality of the experience, especially how immersive it is, appears to be crucial, unquote. Giulio Bernardi, a study co-author and neuroscientist at IMT School for Advanced Studies, Lucca, in Italy, said in a statement, quote, this suggests that dreaming may reshape how brain activity is interpreted by the sleeper. The more immersive the dream, the deeper the sleep feels, unquote. Surprisingly, although physiological markers of sleep pressure steadily decreased during the night, participants reported feeling like their sleep was becoming deeper. This indicates that dream experiences may help sustain that feeling of deep sleep, even as the biological drive for sleep decreases. It's possible that even as our brains are active, immersive dreams may help maintain a defining feature of restorative sleep, our sense of disconnection from the world. Quote, understanding how dreams contribute to the feeling of deep sleep opens new perspectives on sleep health and mental well-being, unquote, said Bernardi. Quote, if dreams help sustain the feeling of deep sleep, then alterations in dreaming could partly explain why some people feel they sleep poorly even when standard objective sleep indices appear normal, unquote. Immersive dreams may help buffer changes in brain activity and help sustain the experience of being deeply asleep. In other words, neurologist Sigmund Freud may have been onto something when he said that dreams are the, quote, guardians of sleep, unquote. This next article is from the Environment, Animals, Pets, Dogs section and is entitled, Are Some Dog Breeds Really Easier to Train? Not really. Written by R.J. McKenzie, published March 24, 2026. Even famously obedient breeds like Border Collies and Labs aren't always easier to train. This article begins with a photo. An over-the-shoulder photograph shows a person training a small black dog on a polished wooden floor. The person, seen from the back in a gray sweater, holds up their hand in stay or wait command gesture. The dog, a small black mixed breed with floppy ears and a pink collar, sits attentively and looks up at the person with a focused expression. Its caption reads, genetics play a role, but breed stereotypes don't tell the whole story about what makes a dog biddable. Choosing a dog is more than a matter of aesthetics. Owners may enjoy their Shiba Inu's thick coat and narrow muzzle, but appreciate its stoic nature and loyalty more. A Chihuahua's owner may enjoy its pint-sized pickup ability, but value its playfulness above everything else. After all, every single breed page on the American Kennel Club's website lists a breed's personality and social traits alongside its physical characteristics. A key factor for many dog owners is how easy their pooch is to train. A wayward Bichon Frise might be a slight nuisance in social settings, but a misbehaving Rottweiler's strength and size can pose serious risks. The AKC also offers a 5-point scale of trainability for each breed. They list the Border Collie, German Shepherd, and even the diminutive Papillon as among the most trainable breeds. But recent genetic research into man's best friend has shown that, at best, these scales simplify dogs' complex inner worlds and, at worst, are misleading about how dogs' breeds affect their behavior. Creating a dog genetic database. Eleanor Carlson first became interested in canine genetics while still a research trainee. She worked on the sequencing of the first complete dog genome, that of a boxer called Tasha. Carlson is currently a genomicist at the University of Massachusetts Chan Medical School and Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard. In recent years, she has continued her doggy genetics work through a project called Darwin's Ark. Darwin's Ark lets owners register their dogs in a database that records dogs' behavioral traits alongside their breed type. Quote, right now, we have about 45,500 dogs registered, unquote, Carlson tells Popular Science. Several thousand of these dogs have also had their genomes sequenced, creating one of the world's largest dog genetics databases. This trove of information helped Carlson's team see how breed and behavior are associated. They delved into this relationship in a 2022 study. One of the measured traits was biddability, essentially how easy it is to get a dog to do something. This includes behaviors observed during training, but more generally reflects a dog's responsiveness to humans. There is an additional photo. A brown and white Border Collie gently rests its white paw on a person's outstretched hand against a backdrop of warm, sunlit green grass. The concepts of trusting bond, obedience, and tender interaction between its owner and its well-trained pet. Its caption reads, Border Collies are often considered one of the most trainable dog breeds, but that thinking has more to do with confirmation bias than reality. Carlson soon realized that there was a flaw in the purebred data from Darwin's Ark. Owners might be more likely to recognize playfulness in a Cocker Spaniel as opposed to a Dogo Argentino, because it's the very trait that made them choose that breed in the first place. There's a confirmation bias at play. Luckily, nearly half of the dogs in the study were mutts with complex ancestry and less breed bias. The mutts' biddability sometimes contradicted breed stereotypes. For example, owners of Labrador Retrievers tended to describe their dogs as more friendly toward humans, which aligns with the breed's stereotype. However, having more or less Labrador ancestry did not affect how friendly mutts were with humans. Based on breed information alone, just 9% of dogs' behavioral patterns could be predicted. In other words, not a lot. Identifying the most trainable dog breeds. What do these findings mean for dog training efforts? Biddability was one of the few behavioral traits with a stronger association in certain breeds. Owners were more likely to score Belgian Malinois, Vislas, and Border Collies highly for biddability, and mutts with more ancestry from these breeds were also slightly more likely to be biddable. But that information isn't really useful for determining whether an individual dog will be easy to train. Border Collies might be fractionally more biddable on average, but there will still be Collies that are more independent. On the other end of the scale, there will be Chow Chows that don't mind following instructions. Carlson points out that this finding shouldn't really be surprising when we think about the history of dogs. Purebred dogs are a modern invention, dreamed up by Victorians obsessed with genetic order. Breed standards over the intervening 150 years have been carefully selected for physical traits. For example, a beagle has to stand roughly 14 inches tall at the shoulder. But behavioral traits have not been genetically selected in the same way. Nevertheless, selective breeding has created a population of dogs that are easy to train. Carlson says Labrador Retrievers selected to be guide dogs are genetically distinct from the wider Labrador population. This makes sense, as the average lab would struggle to resist the temptation to eat its owner's dinner rather than help them navigate. But this selective breeding comes at a cost. Analysis of guide dog populations show that when complex behavioral traits are aggressively selected for, the risk of genetic disease in the dog population spikes, says Carlson. Ultimately, some dogs are easier to train than others. It's just that looking solely at breed information to find a biddable pooch is unlikely to get you very far. The next time you're choosing a new best friend from the shelter, paying attention to the pooch in front of you rather than the breed standards in a textbook will help you make the best decision. This final article comes from the Science, Biology, Evolution section and is entitled, Europe's First Domesticated Dogs Arrived Over 3,000 Years Earlier Than We Thought. Written by Laura Baeses, published March 25, 2026. Our oldest companions transitioned from hunter-gathering to farming right alongside us. This article begins with a photo. Its caption reads, One of the dogs sampled in the paper from the Skatholm site in Sweden, buried alongside a human. Geneticists are pushing back the timeline of when people first domesticated dogs in Europe. Using the DNA from over 200 ancient dogs, geneticists found that we domesticated our best friends over 14,000 years ago. The dogs living in pre-agricultural Europe also substantially contributed to the genetics of those that would live after agriculture's rise and up to the present. The findings were detailed in a study published today in the journal Nature. Quote, dogs were the only domesticated animal to predate farming, so their evolution can help us understand how a big shift in lifestyle shaped our own history, unquote. Pontus Skoglund, a study co-author and geneticist at the Francis Crick Institute, said in a statement. There is an additional photo. Its caption reads, Reenactment scene in front of the Kesselach cave in Thaingen, Switzerland. Pelts are seen drying outside of a cave with baskets. Old dogs, new tech. dogs were domesticated from gray wolves between 32,000 and 11,000 years ago. Towards the end of the most recent ice age, they were the first animals to form a domestic relationship with humans, long before farming began. However, scientists still don't know where and how dogs were first domesticated. Previously, the earliest direct genetic evidence for dogs only dates back 10,900 years ago. It has also been difficult to analyze the DNA from the remains of older members of the dog family, called canids, and studying the appearance of bones does not always help explain how dogs and wolves separated. In this new study, researchers analyzed the DNA from 216 canid skeletal remains. Of these, 181 samples predate the Neolithic period when farming began, or roughly before 10,000 years ago. The remains came from sites across Europe and Western Asia, including Switzerland, Germany, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Turkey, Sweden, Denmark, and Scotland. To boost the amount of DNA that they could use from the bones, the team used a technique called hybridization capture. The technique creates genetic probes that could sniff out the canid DNA from the microbial DNA that can contaminate very old remains. Using hybridization capture, they identified many early dogs. The oldest in the sample is 14,200 years old and was discovered at Kesselach Cave in Switzerland in 1903. Nicknamed Maxilla, it is one of the oldest dogs ever confirmed by genetics, following a 15,800-year-old dog from Turkey. There is a third photo. Its caption reads, "Excavation of the Kesselach Cave under Jakob Herrle in 1903. The 14,200-year-old Kesselach dog shared more genetics with European dogs than Asian dogs. This suggests that dogs were domesticated well before the birth of this particular dog, due to the time it would have taken for European and Asian dogs to become genetically different. Quote, "Without using these advanced genetic tools, we wouldn't be able to confidently distinguish dogs from wolves based on skeletal evidence alone," unquote, added Anders Bergstrom, a study co-author and evolutionary geneticist at the University of East Anglia and former postdoctoral researcher at the Crick. The first European farm dogs. The spread of farming in Europe was accompanied by a large migration of people from Southwest Asia. To understand the role dogs may have played during this transition, the team modeled the ancestry of European dogs as Neolithic farmers arrived on the continent. They saw that genetic changes in the dogs largely mirrored the changes occurring in humans, but to a smaller degree. Based on their analysis, the team believes that dogs from local hunter-gatherer groups already living in Europe contributed to the genetics of dog populations that were already working alongside farmers about 10,000 years ago. There is a fourth photo. Its caption reads, "Maxilla of the domesticated dog from the Kesselach Cave in Thaingen, Switzerland." Quote, "It's fascinating that dogs living before the era of agriculture contributed substantially to the genetics of farming and present-day European dogs," unquote, Skoglund added. Quote, "Dogs are clearly important to our ancestors, as the first farmers seem to have adopted previous hunter-gatherer dogs into their groups as they moved into Europe," unquote. Many dog domestication questions still remain, and the team is still researching where and how canids spread across Europe. They believe that they were likely domesticated somewhere in Asia, and Bergstrom believes that, quote, "every piece of evidence is a step forward in this journey," unquote. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's material from Popular Science Magazine. I'm Michael Piotrasz, and I'll be back soon with more interesting articles. Thank you for listening.